Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you, of course, are listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Rosalie Sorrell's favorite poem from Kenneth Patchen. Hand me a star, take me to a new city. You're wasting your lives, you're going along with your pockets full of trash. You have been taught to want only the ugly and the small. You have been taught to hate what is clean and of the star. A dog will throw up when he is sick. Are you lower than dogs that you keep it all down and cram in more? The voice which is life shall sound all over the earth and over all who lie deep in its green arms. Go you to lie there as a fool or as a child, tired from his beautiful playing, to fall happily asleep. Well, Grimes Creek, Idaho, I'm on the telephone now with Rosalie Sorrell's My Old Friend, who lives up there in the mountain fastness of the Idaho Rockies. Hello, Rosalie.
Hello.
Hello. There you are. You've been building a fire because it's snowing there now?
Yes, it's snowing to beat the band.
And big flakes, not just little flakes.
Flakes.
Have you got a fire going now?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So it'll warm up. It'll warm up. I guess what most people have asked me about when they heard that I was going to talk to you on the telephone was about the current state of your health. You know, you had just had the breast cancer surgery, and are convalescing. How's that going?
Well, it's going pretty well. I'm mending a pace. I think, let's see, next Tuesday they're going to implant something they call a port in my chest that they can drip some noxious substance into me with, and they're going to start the chemotherapy then. After that heals, that has to go for about a week.
Then the prognosis is good. Your attitude sounds great, and your humor sounds as though it's intact. You have people up there helping out?
Yeah, my brother came up for the last weekend. My kids have all been up, and lots of friends.
He came up to put in a garden, right?
Yeah.
And it's snowing.
Yes.
Well, I hope he has a nice vacation.
he's gone now. He left when the snow started coming down.
Who can blame him? One thing I wanted to ask you, this may be a personal question, but it isn't with me, and that is, when I got the congestive heart failure, I said to my cardiologist, does this mean that I have to give up, a Bombay martini straight up with two olives on the side? And he said, no, your blood needs to be thinner. And so, martinis will help thin your blood. Just remember they're toxic, so don't take too many of them. What's your prognosis in that front?
Well, let's see. I think I've been drinking a little wine, no Bombay martinis. But I think I probably have to stop that when I have the chemo because it makes you feel sick. I don't know that it hurts you any. It just makes you feel sick.
Well, that's, I think that's probably a major calamity. But
yes, it is. I however, will wait on the final decision because some of my friends who've done it say they just went right on and drank all the wine they wanted when they were fine.
They're probably herbal substitutes as far as that goes.
God, I hope so.
I was going back through the recordings that I have, and we're going to, I have a whole list of them here that we're going to be playing during the course of this show. All the way back to Folkways, when you were still living in Utah and your house was teeming with children.
Teeming.
Remember your playpen looked like a bus stop for midgets. And and I found that recording when you were playing the baritone ukulele when I first met you.
That's right.
And singing plaintive Scottish ballads like Lass of the Low Country. Remember how many times I asked you to sing that song? Alas of the Low Country. But then you started collecting songs around Utah, songs of the Utah pioneers, and then did that recording for Folkways of folk songs of Utah and Idaho. And the song that we're going to play is, I think my favorite song from that record is Utah's Dixie, because it's so true.
Yes.
It's so close to the truth. Do you ever sing those songs again?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was just talking today to a woman in Boston who called to see how I was, and she hired me about 5 years ago to come to Boston and sing for a bunch of Mormon ladies who had were expatriate Westerners out there in Boston. And they hired me to come and tell them stories and sing them songs from the Mormon pioneers. And every once in a while someone does that. I really enjoy.
Oh, once I lived in Cottonwood and owned a little farm, but I was called a Dixie, which gave me much alarm. To raise the cane and cotton, I right away must go. But the reason why they sent me, I'm sure I do not know. I yoked old Jim and Bally up all for to make a start. To leave my house and garden, it almost broke my heart. We moved along quite slowly and often looked behind, for the sands and rocks of Dixie kept running through my mind. At length we reached a black ridge where I broke my wagon down. I could not find the carpenter, we're 20 miles from town. So with a clumsy cedar pole I fixed an awkward slide. My wagon pulled so heavy that Betsy could not ride. While Betsy was a-walking, I told her to take care. When all upon a sudden, she struck a prickly pear. And she began to blubber out as loud as she could bawl. If I was back in Cottonwood, I would not come at all. And when we reached the sandy, we could not move at all. For poor old Jim and Bally began to puff and bawl. I whipped and swore a little, but could not make the rout. For myself, the team, and Betsy were all of us give out. And next we got to Washington, where there we stayed a while, to see if April showers would make the verger smile. But oh, I was mistaken, and so I went away. For the red hills of November look just the same in May. I feel so sad and lonely now, there's nothing here to cheer, except prophetic sermons which we very often hear. Now hand them out by dozens and prove them by the book. I'd rather have some roasting ears to stay at home and cook. I feel so weak and hungry now, I think I'm nearly dead. It's 7 weeks next Sunday since I've tasted bread. Of carrot tops and lucerne greens we have enough to eat. But I'd like to change my diet off for buckwheat cakes and meat. The hot winds whirl around me and take my breath away. I've had the chills and fever till I'm nearly shook to death. All earthly tribulations are but a moment here. And oh, if I prove faithful, a righteous crown shall wear. My wagon sold for sorghum seed to make a little bread. Poor old Jim and Bally long, long ago are dead. There's only me and Betsy left to hold a cotton tree. May heaven help the Dixieite wherever he may be.
We went up to... I was getting hot in Utah, it seemed to me, and I had to get out for a while, so we went up to Boise to work for the Unitarian Church. You'd accepted an offer to record a record for them to make some money.
Yeah.
They wanted to build a church. Right. Seems to me that a liberal denomination, instead of building a building, would take their money and pass it out on the skids to anybody who looked like they needed it. I could never understand that, Unitarian building programs. But nonetheless, there we were.
We have to have some place to drink coffee.
Oh. Well, that's right. We had to leave Utah to get a cup of coffee. Well, I think that I was listening to that recording. You know, I finally, was it John Harm who put that together?
Harm, with an S on the end of it, Harm.
Harms, okay.
Yeah.
And the last song on that is Somewhere Between by Malvina Reynolds. And you have a long connection with Malvina. I didn't know if you had met her at the time that we made that or not, but you have a long connection with Malvina Reynolds. In fact, I think that the project you're currently interested in doing the most. Would you tell us about that?
Oh, I want to do an album of her songs. I would like to do a sort of a play-like thing, you know, like a reminiscence of telling stories about her and do some of the songs and some things that people have written about her just to kind of bring her back. She was a very pragmatic sort of person and doesn't believe in an afterlife, but I'd think of her as a kind of reluctant ghost, and I think we need a dose of her, so my intention was to drag her back kicking and screaming. I'd like to tell people what I use her songs for, what I think. I mean, they were great songs, but they also really make things happen, and I'd like to tell people about that.
You've used a good bit of her music in doing that in the powerful work you do with women's clinics, women's programs, and things like that, in which you have a great and abiding interest just for your own life experience.
That's right.
And those songs were actually way before their time, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They're very pertinent right now. And it's particularly some of her more introspective songs that never got listened to so much. I like that one, There's No Hole in My Head, Too Bad, where she starts out saying, everybody thinks my head's full of nothing. They try to put their own special stuff in, fill the space with candy wrappers, keep out sex and revolution, but there's no hole in my head.
So we're going to, we'll listen to Somewhere Between by Malvina Reynolds.
On Monday, I think I'm a sinner. On Tuesday, I know I'm a saint. On Wednesday, I don't know what I am, but I know that a saint I ain't. Somewhere between the good and the evil, somewhere between the right and the wrong, somewhere between the kind and the somewhere between is where I belong. On Monday, I'd steal from a baby. On Tuesday, I'd give you my shirt. On Wednesday, I lie on my couch and I moan, 'cause my conscience is doing me dirt. Somewhere between the good and the evil, somewhere between the right and the wrong, somewhere between the kind and the mean, somewhere between is where I belong. On Monday, I rail at my kinfolk. On Tuesday, I'm gentle and good. On Wednesday, I wonder, I count every blunder. I wish that I knew where I stood. Somewhere between the good and the evil, somewhere between the right and the wrong, somewhere between the kind and the mean, somewhere between, that's where I belong. If I could just peek at the record, I'd know if it's mucky or clean. I'd know if I'm destined for heaven or hell, or to float like a bird in between.
between, somewhere between the good and the evil, somewhere between the right and the wrong, somewhere between the kind and the mean, somewhere between, that's where I belong.
My idea of the model folk singer, although that term is problematic and always has been, my model of a, because see, I think a folk song is a song that isn't owned. It has nobody's name on it.
Right.
You know, it's common property like the National Forest or like, you know, the Postal Service. It belongs to everybody. But my idea of a model folk singer is somebody who sings those songs from the common treasury. And then find songs by other people that are really worth singing, and then makes them up. Does all three, not just one. And to me, you're the model of the ideal folk singer because you've done that. You've sought out the tradition. And how many people are out on the boards making their living doing any part of the traditional repertoire? You could, like, count them on the fingers of one hand.
Yeah, not many.
Not many. So that's You found the traditional music and do it as well as it can be done, but then what you choose to sing is truly marvelous, to, and the people that you choose to court to learn their songs. And I remember I was talking to you about, you know, your favorite songs, your favorite writer. You mentioned Peter Bellamy.
Oh, God.
Did you know Peter?
Yes, I did. Now, there were some of you who sang traditional songs better than almost anybody, and who also, he could write songs that sounded like they were traditional songs. I mean, that's really hard to do, you know.
It's like boring holes in furniture and selling them as antiques, yeah.
Right, right. But he could really do it with a great authenticity. I love that piece he wrote about the transports, the people who were sent from the English prisons. Mm-hmm. Australia for transport.
Was that a folk opera? That
yeah.
That was the one. I've never heard that. Is that on recording?
I've never seen it on a CD. I have it on vinyl. It was recorded. It's a beautiful recording. It has Martin Carthy and Cyril Tawney and A.L. Lloyd, June Tabor.
Sometime you think about it, would you make a dub of that and send it to me?
I will.
I can play that a lot.
I'm very enthusiastic at that. I think it's one of the best pieces of work I ever heard. Dolly Collins did all the music arrangements for it, Shirley Collins' sister.
Well, let's listen to you singing Peter Bellamy's song, Sweet Loving Friendship.
I love that song.
If you look out from some high, high window, and you see the sunset beyond the town, you may see the rooks to the treetops screaming, or the wing of evening come folding down. Between the morning and evening, between the spring and the winter drear, there comes a time of new beginnings, when sweet loving friendship drives away all fear. There are many here known not but sorrow, and like the beasts they live from day to day. But we can think on a bright tomorrow, since sweet loving friendship drives all cares away. No lonely convict can resist the darkness, just as no sailor can the driving rain. But find a comrade to share your fastness, and the sweet loving friendship will ease your pain. Just like that sailor, when his ship makes harbor, just like a traveler who finds an inn, what care we if the wind blows harder, if we be safe and warm within? So if you look out from some high window and you see the sunset beyond the sky, you need not fear the coming darkness. If some sweet loving friend be standing by.
Also, who you choose to play with has been real important to the way that you go at music. You've gone at it music, at folk singing, and traveling so many different ways in such a complete, although very complex life, but it's been damned complete. When we were talking before, and I was asking you about particular things that you would like me to play, you mentioned Bruce Carver. Remember that hellacious tour that started out in Saratoga, went to Florida, went to Denver, went to the coast, and then you and I wound up in Grand Forks, North Dakota, talking so much we missed our airplane to go to Toronto?
That 15,000 miles of driving, I think.
It was that, and we had to use the money we were going to make in order to rent a small plane to go up to Toronto and work for Mitch Podolak. Yeah, Bruce Carver was along on that tour. He taught me an invaluable thing. You know, I love words. When I got the first cup of coffee on the road and cut a little hole in the plastic lid on the top, he said, they call that's a painter's lip. Because he was a house painter.
That's right.
And I never knew what a painter, that was called a painter's lip. Hell of a guitar player. And you did several records with Bruce Carver.
Yeah, I think there's three.
And the one that you did, the song that you did that was so happy you did was a song that I made up called Going Away. And one of the reasons I like it is that you sing it beautifully, Bruce Carver plays it beautifully, but also you adjusted it the way it needed to be adjusted. Because, you see, I wrote that song for Ammon Hennessy when he died in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought nobody would understand it at that time, and it was too hard to explain. So I changed the gender to She's Gone Away,
mm-hmm.
which renders the song senseless. But so then you turn it back, of course, to gender neutral. You're gone away, and now it makes sense. You know, the song is for Ammon Hennessy, the great Catholic anarchist. Let's listen to Rosalie Sorrells and Bruce Carver doing "Going Away" by yours truly.
Is that the moon I see? over there in the west. All the headlights gleam, C&O Express. I know you're gone. Whatever I say, and it won't be long till I make up my mind to go away. Is that the sun over there on the eastern shore? All the cold bed glow through the firebox door. I know you're gone. Whatever I say, and it won't be long till I make up my mind to go away. See that fool, he can't hear the whistle, he's a blind old man, he's caught on a trestle. He can't get off and he can't get back. And the train kept coming and it rocked him off the track. And other storms may blow, the wind may rise, but I where the fast mail flies. I know you're gone. Whatever I say, and it won't be long till I make up my mind go away. He can't get off, oh, he can't get back. The train kept coming.
where the fast may fly.
Over the years, in the shows after show that we've done and that I've watched you do, and then I've listened to the recordings that you've made, are autobiographical, but in an episodic way. What I mean, as your life has progressed, and I honestly believe that the worst things that could happen to a person have happened to you, and the best things that could happen to a person, and then with a whole lot of middle. But you've had the courage to write about it, to make songs about it, and then to really sit in front of people and sing them, and you sit on a stage and demand intimacy, irrespective of what the people think they're there for or not, and if they don't give it, then they're the losers, not you. See, and I was thinking particularly of a more recent song of yours called Hitchhiker in the Rain. Could you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, I wrote that. It's a lament, I guess I would call it, for the time people think of as the 60s, although I never call it that, because for me it started in the middle of the 50s and it lasted through the middle of the 70s, But that time to me was an extraordinary. There was a feeling of being in a family, I mean, people took me in all the time with all my kids. And there was just such a generosity and also such an upheaval about it. It was an amazing time. And I always marked that time in my head by the fact that I always picked up hitchhikers, I had this kid, David, who told me I'd ruin his hitchhiking karma if I didn't pick up the hitchhiker, so I did it. And it's a lament for him, too, because he took his life in 1976. And I continued, in fact, to pick up hitchhikers, having some sort of mental image of him lost in the stars, not getting a ride because I didn't give somebody one. Everybody would say, Rosalie, you have to quit doing that. It's something awful will happen to you. And nothing awful really ever happened to me. But I was aware of the sense that we were losing that possibility of contact and intimacy because of fear and God knows what all went into it. And at some point, I remember saying, well, I always pick up the ones with the guitars. You know? Somebody gave me a long, cold look and said Charles Manson had a guitar. And I stopped. I don't do it anymore. And I wrote the song because I passed the hitchhiker one day in Sonoma County in the rain. He looked like somebody I knew or somebody I'd like to know, but I was too afraid. And I think about it all the time and wonder, you know, what in the world we've done or what's been done to us that makes us afraid of our own children.
I saw him yesterday, standing in the rain. His thumb won't know, his back half turned, his eyes as far away as Spain. Shining full at the being in the park. Your body long and lean and curved just like a question mark. Oh, I turned my head and drove by faster than a midnight train. I left the aging innocent just
afraid, and you and love and fear and memory.
can't let the occasion pass. That you're one of the rare people who work the stage that understands the importance of what goes on between the songs. That in many ways is as important as the songs themselves. So that it's a complete performance. It's a whole, not just one song after the other. And I learned that from you. You know, when I first showed up in the East and watched how you worked in New York and then up in Saratoga, that I was really going to have to pay attention to what was going on between these songs. Would you tell that great story about the Boy Scout knife?
Yeah, you know, I haven't told those stories for a while. I've got on another kick, but I used to love to tell that story. And in Chicago, there was a guy who I know had some mafia connection or something who used to come buy a drink for the whole house if I'd tell that story. In any case, it's a traveling salesman story, really. This traveling salesman is sitting in a bar in the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Beirut, bored and lonely. Right away, you know it's an old story because nobody's been in the bar of the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Beirut lately and been bored, maybe blown up, but not bored. But there he was, looking in the mirror, as I often do, because you can stare at everybody in the room without them seeing that you're doing it. And just contemplating the faces and the fact that there wasn't anybody interesting there. And all of a sudden, outside through the window, he could see a Stutz Bearcat, a mint-condition Stutz Bearcat, drive right up and stop right in front. You hardly ever see those in Beirut. And out of it piled the most incredibly gorgeous girl he had ever seen. I mean, she had long, blonde, flowing golden hair. She had big blue eyes. She had a peaches and cream complexion. She had a gorgeous body. She was the prettiest thing he'd ever seen. She came right through that door and across the terrazzo floor. She came up to the bar and threw herself right down on her stool beside him, and she said to him, "Hi, why don't you buy me a drink?" He says, "I thought you'd never ask." And he bought her a drink, bought her a couple of drinks. They had those. And then she said, "Why don't you take me home?" Well, they went out and got into the Stutz Bearcat and went back to her place, a beautiful apartment. She fixed him a very nice meal, and they had a couple more drinks, listened to some nice music, and then she made incredible love to him all night long. And in the morning, he woke up and he said, "Hey, I have to tell you. I can't tell you how bored and lonely I was right there in the bar of the Conrad Hilton Hotel, but you came along and you have brightened up my life. And I want to get you something. I want to get you anything you want. Just tell me what you want and I'll get it for you." And she says, "Well, as you can see, I'm a very attractive lady, and I have long, blonde, flowing golden hair, and I have the big blue eyes and the peaches and cream complexion and the gorgeous body. Men just love me. They follow me around everywhere I go, and they give me things. I have a mint-condition Stutz Bearcat, and in my garage I have a Porsche as well. I have furs, and I have jewels, and I have everything a girl could possibly want or need. However, there is one thing I'd really like to have." And he says, "Tell me what it is, I'll get it." She says, "It's a six-bladed pearl-handled gold inlaid Boy Scout knife." Long pause. He says, "That's weird. And they're harder to get here than Stutz Bearcats. But I'll do my best. I'll do my best." So he goes on his salesman trip all the way around the Mediterranean. He stops here and he stops there and finally stops in Constantinople, which is no longer even called that, on a bright blue blazing day in one of those great open markets. And in the back of a booth, in the back of a bin, he sees sparkling there a six-bladed pearl-handled gold inlaid Boy Scout knife, hops right on it, haggles around, gets it, shoves it in his pocket, makes a beeline for Beirut. And when he gets there, he goes back to the bar of the Conrad Hilton Hotel, having forgotten that lady's name, as traveling salesmen are wont to do. And he sits down on the stool, looking into the mirror, waiting expectantly. And sure enough, up perks that mint condition Stutz Bearcat, out pops that gorgeous girl. In she comes, across the lobby, into the bar, sits down beside him on the stool and says, "Hello, again." And the same scene unfolds. They have their drinks, they get in the car, they go back to her place. It's a fine meal and more drinks and the beautiful music and incredible love all night long. And in the morning, he wakes up and nudges her and says, "Hey, I got something for you." And he reaches over to his jacket pocket and he pulls out the six-bladed pearl-handled gold-inlaid Boy Scout knife and dangles it in front of her and says, "What do you think of that?" She looks at it for a minute and she says, "Thank you very much." Takes it into her hand, reaches under the bed, opens a big bin with 1,203 other six-bladed pearl-handled gold-inlaid Boy Scout knives and throws it in. Even longer pause than before, he says, "That makes me feel ever such a little bit weird. Would you mind explaining that?" She says, "Well, as you can see, I'm a very attractive lady. I have the long, blonde, flowing golden hair. I have the big blue eyes. I have the peaches and cream complexion and the gorgeous body, and men just love me. They follow me around everywhere I go, and they give me things. I have a mint condition Stutz Bearcat. However, one of these days, my long, blonde, flowing hair will grow gray and brittle. My big blue eyes will grow dim. My peaches and cream complexion will get all wrinkled up, and my body's going to sag a whole lot, and they are not going to follow me around anymore. They are going to stay away in droves. They're sure as hell not going to give me any more Stutz Bearcats. And I will be alone, all alone. But what would not a Boy Scout do for a six-bladed, pearl-handled, gold-inlaid Boy Scout knife?"
Well told. Well told. We've known each other better, a good bit better than 40 years.
That's right.
And I've enjoyed every damn minute of it, you know. And you've been, you got me into this trade, and which means a whole new life and a lot healthier than the one I was leading back in Salt Lake City, for sure. And you know that. I mean, forever in your debt.
I'm not ever sure you're not going to beat me about the head and ears with a fungo bat for doing that.
No.
I'm glad you like it.
Boy, I sure, yeah. It was a whole new life, which I'm eternally grateful. So, and also just thank you. You've hung on to songs that I've made up, because, you know, I make up songs in my head, and when they're done in my head, I don't write things down. That's as much as I get out of it, you know. Then they vanish. But no, you've hung on to those songs and offer them to other people. I want to go all the way back to kind of where we started with that first folk legacy record that you made with Mitch Greenhill, and the first recording of a song that I made up, and I believe I gave it to you for a gift. If I Could Be the Rain.
Oh, that's got to be one of my favorite songs. To me, and you know, each person who takes somebody else's song and makes it their own has their own vision of what it is about, but to me the key line is, "If I could hide the way I feel, I'd never sing again."
All right, Rosalie, we'll talk to you later. Your birthday party's coming in. It'll be your 65th birthday at the end of June.
65th?
Yeah, is that what it is?
65.
Oh, 65, yeah, well, and there'll be a whole lot of people that will be trying to find the secret location of this party, and I'm not telling anybody. But I hope you've got somebody else to do the cooking this year.
Yeah, I think this year I'm going to lie in the hammock and direct traffic.
All right.
That's all I'm going to be good for a while.
We'll see you later on. Let's listen to Rosalie Swirls of Mitch Greenhill, If I Could Be the Rain.
Sometimes I wonder how the simple rain. Why the wind's a lonely child that cries itself to sleep. I've envied the sunlight, the amber of its smile. Wished it could be borrowed for a while. If I could be the rain, I'd wash down to the sea. If I could be the wind, there'd be no more of me. If I could be the sunlight, and all the days were mine, I would find some special place to shine.
That's it for this edition of Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Thanks very much for listening to us. I certainly would also like to thank the Heshan World Fund of the Tides Foundation for helping us to do this sort of thing. We'll see you again. From the writing of Rosalie Sorrells. My love for the West is bound to my love for my family and a firm conviction that strength will only return to me when I am weakened by time and the rigors of living in the world if I make contact with the land upon which I was born. It is the territory of space, a place where people have gone so that they could hear the sound of their own singing, so that they could hear their name if it were called, so that they could know what they think. They think some strange and wonderful things, the drifters, the gamblers, the loners, the cowboys, the Indians, the Mormons, wobblies, organizers, the pickers, the planters, miners, loggers, truck drivers, Basques, Swedes, crotchety old men and women who have been there, young girls and boys who are trying to find the way. But the space is narrowing. You feel it everywhere you go. And with it, the space of mind seems to be closing as well. You long for some place so that's new, frontiers again, new mountains to climb, new persuasions.